Welcome back to the FKT podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today we're chatting with Bob Stewart, who is absolutely crushing FKTs in the state of Pennsylvania. Join us to learn about his 250-mile unsupported Tuscarora Trail FKT, as well as how this podcast inspires him to keep moving at night, what it's like setting records in Rocksylvania, plus tips for balancing family and epic adventures. Thank you so much, Bob, for joining me on the show today.
Thank you for having me. It's actually quite surreal to be on the podcast because I've listened to it for years and years. Pretty excited.
Well, I'm really glad that you're going to be on here today to talk about your FKTs. Obviously, like sort of out of a personal interest, being somebody who also lives in Pennsylvania, your 8 FKTs on the site are pretty much a showcase of the best trails in the state. I've done most of them, so I'm super excited to talk to you today about what goes into it. I did notice, though, that your first FKT was 2020, so you're really recently doing these. So can you tell me a little bit about what got you into the sport?
So it was sort of a slow progression. My wife got me into backpacking back about 13 years ago. And from there, I dove headfirst into the sport and just really fell in love with it and just started backpacking all the trails I could find. And then I decided that I was going to do all the 20 state forest trails in Pennsylvania. And once I decided to do that, I realized that it would take some time. It'd be quite an undertaking. And so I eventually started to do them a little faster and see how quickly I could do the trails. And then I realized that if I were to do FKTs, I could sort of bang all of them out really quickly. And once I started doing the Susquehanna Trail, I just fell in love with it and I just fell in love with the sport. So
that's really cool. Yeah, I also came to FKTs from backpacking, so I understand that a little bit. So are you native to Pennsylvania or are you a transplant here?
I am a transplant. So I grew up in Westchester County, New York. And then I actually went to a baseball camp in Hillsgrove, Pennsylvania, which is near the Loyal Sock Trail, which I do not have the FKT on. So from there, I went to college in Pennsylvania. I went to Lehigh, and then I moved to Philadelphia maybe 15 years ago.
Right. Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah, I don't feel like a lot of people come to PA to do these trails that you've been doing. They're great trails, but they're not really known outside the state.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible because if you look at it, Pennsylvania has so many long distance trails and they don't get a ton of attention. And so that's why I'm a big proponent online in different groups, sharing my knowledge of the trails and doing the FKTs to get trails exposure, like the Donut Hole Trail, which is a lesser known trail in Pennsylvania. That was a fun one.
Yeah. I haven't done the donut hole yet, but my goal is to do the donut hole eating only donuts. That's probably a really terrible idea, but just for the name of Donut Hole Trail, I feel like it really invites that.
I'm actually curious where it got its name because there's really no information on the background. So
yeah, I haven't been able to figure that out either. I'm guessing because it's some sort of loop, but lots of them are loops. So that doesn't really make sense. I don't know.
Yeah.
That was actually one of the things that I noticed when I moved to Pennsylvania because I had hiked the AT. So I knew about the AT. But when I moved here, just the amount of public land and trails was really astonishing to me. I had only been here a couple months and I was like, okay, I'm going to go do the Loyal Sock Trail because it's the rite of passage. Every Pennsylvanian has to hike that, you know, and it's been nonstop since then. So one of the things I noticed about your FKTs is that with the exception of the Susquehannock, the STS, you have done them all unsupported, which is carrying all of your supplies start to finish, only obtaining water along the way. So I'm kind of curious why it is that you choose to work with that modality for your FKTs.
So I absolutely love the style. And I always love the philosophy of doing the fastest known time is whatever is the best style for you is what you should go with. There's no right style to do a trail. And so I just love the idea of putting on a backpack, having everything in it, having a sort of a plan in the beginning, which usually goes awry, but, and then just relying on yourself from start to finish. I just love the idea of that. And I really enjoy being out there and seeing how far I can push myself.
Yeah, absolutely. I struggled with the unsupported modality for a long time. And then this spring I've done 2 unsupported efforts and it felt really good to finally feel like I could do that. It is really rewarding to just feel like you just have everything and it's just you. And definitely a different type of maximizing speed, but also being super self-reliant. It's an interesting balance.
Exactly. And it was also somewhat out of necessity because my wife would stay with our daughter. So I'd have to just go out and be my own crew.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I did it a few times, I realized that it was the style that I would like to stick with. So
you set the unsupported Tuscarora Trail FKT. This is a 250-mile trail through Pennsylvania, Maryland, West Virginia, and part of Virginia. I'm curious how this FKT or this trail in general, in your opinion, compared to some of your other FKTs are all in Pennsylvania.
First off, it's a unique trail in that quite a bit of the trail is on roads. So that's a different experience. Typically in Pennsylvania and other trails that I've hiked, it's 90 to 95% trail. And this has some really, really long road hiking sections, 20 plus miles. And so I didn't know what to expect with those. But the trail itself was beautiful. It had a lot of different sections and it had different feels. And it was interesting, again, in Pennsylvania, when I'm hiking those trails, sort of the same ecosystem, the same environment. But when you're hiking from Virginia to Pennsylvania, you're going through more diverse lands and it's a more diverse experience. But it was funny, as soon as I hit Pennsylvania, I was back on the rocks and on the ridges. So it felt like I was back home.
Like, I hiked the Tuscarora Trail last year, and that was something that was interesting to me is each state was very distinct. It wasn't homogenous, which when you're hiking in PA, it is very much the same. And even I feel like the AT in the paralleling section is very similar. But the Tuscarora had a lot of variety to it, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah. And it was funny, when I got my shuttle ride from the hotel that I stayed at to the trailhead, the shuttle driver, her name was Goldilocks, we actually chatted about you because she mentioned, she's like, "Oh, did your Heather hike the trail recently?" And I said, like, "I know, I heard that."
Yeah.
I was actually curious, did you, and I knew you did the Tuscalacia loop.
That's what I was calling it. Yeah.
Did you start on the Tuscarora and end on the AT or opposite?
Yeah, I started with the Tuscarora and ended with the AT.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was curious what you thought of how they compared after doing the sort of more remote Tuscarora compared to the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah, I did it that way on purpose because I had heard so many horror stories about the Tuscarora that I was like, well, I want to do that first and then it'll feel like a vacation to be on the AT. And it really was. I mean, I could have finished the AT section in 3 days and I had given myself 5. So it was very leisurely after being on the Tuscarora, because even after you get off the rocks of Pennsylvania, as you know, the southern part of the Tuscarora is not a walk in the park.
Yeah. And it was funny because, when you finish the Tuscarora, it's like a 2.5 mile hike out to get to the road. So I finished and then I was on the AT and I was like, this is a highway compared to what I've just been on for the past 50 miles or so.
Yeah, absolutely. When I hiked it last year, I went south. And so I came out into the Shenandoah and got onto the AT. And all I remember is just how fast and easy it was. Then I ran the Shenandoah. And I remember I got to the part where the Tuscarora comes in. And then I'm like, sweet, it's so flat and easy from here. And then I was like, no, it's not. It only just felt flat and easy because I had just been on the Tuscarora Trail. So yeah, very much perspective and relative. So speaking about directionality, why did you choose to do the Tuscarora FKT northbound, starting in Shenandoah and finishing on Darlington Ridge in the Cumberland Valley?
So the reason why I went north was I just wanted to end in my home state.
Okay.
That was pretty much the only reason I went north. And everybody said, go south. They said, you want to get the hills out of the way first. Looking back, though, if I was doing it again the first time, I would still go north just to end in Pennsylvania. It just felt right to end in my home state. If I were to do it again, I would certainly go south just to get those technical rocks really, really wore me down at the end. And my mentality was that at the end, with all the rocks and the elevation, I'd have a much lighter pack. My base weight was only about 8 pounds. And so I wouldn't have any food. I had very little food for the last day. And I'd be able to maneuver on the rocks a lot faster. But as you know, when your feet are 250 miles in, they're pretty raw. And when you're off camber, navigating the rocks is pretty agonizing.
And you're fatigued.
You just want it to be over.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I had a little bit of that experience doing the Pennsylvania Appalachian Trail FKT and going north and ending in all the rocks, going into the Delaware Water Gap, and just like having a moment where I was like, I think I just want to cry now because you're just tired. I had no food. My pack was empty, but I was exhausted and just not going fast. The rocks are just too much right now.
I actually was curious about the same question. If you could do the Appalachian Trail unsupported again, which congratulations, by the way, I was following you the entire time.
No, thanks.
That was really fun. And I was reading all of your posts while you're hiking, while you're going through sleep deprivation. And I was just amazed at how like articulate and thoughtful they were. Meanwhile, I'm having trouble like doing basic math to figure out when I need to do my Aquamira drops. And I'm like, has it been 30 minutes or? But my question was, if you were to do it again, would you go south or would you go north?
I think for me, I probably would do it north again, because in the end, I wasn't going to be going fast through those rocks no matter what. So the benefit would be, I guess I would have been maybe doing them in the daylight. So yeah, I would probably be going a little faster. But I think I managed to still probably average about a 3 mile per hour pace through the rocks. And I don't think that I probably would have been going much faster than that personally, even if I had started with them. At the end, it's a lot smoother and flatter going through the Cumberland. And I had considered that because I was like, oh, well, if I still feel good, I'll be able to run. And ultimately, I feel like at the end of 250 miles, you're not really running. So it was much better for me. I probably was doing 4 miles an hour when I started because it was smoother and I was fresh. So even though I had my full pack, I felt like I was better able to capitalize on the terrain going northbound. And I'm most familiar with the AT northbound. And definitely, there's a few spots on the AT that, having done them southbound, they're horrendous and I wouldn't want to do them again southbound. So I'm curious about the trail conditions you experienced on the Tuscarora, because you were out there fairly early in April. I know you mentioned at least at one point a blowdown hell that you had to go through. If anybody's heard of the Tuscarora, they've heard about the sawbriars and the overgrowth and the horrible trail conditions. And I didn't find it to be as bad as everybody had told me. So I'm curious what your experience was.
I definitely agree. I heard horror stories about the trail being just overgrown and not taken care of, but I found it to be the complete opposite. I intentionally chose to do it in April, so it wouldn't be overgrown and it would be in a little better condition. And again, I was following groups online and I could see people maintaining the trail day after day. And so that was giving me a little confidence that it would be in not terrible condition, but it was great. And that's one thing, is I would love to go back, and there's a lot of community around that trail. And I'd love to go back and hike it and experience the trail towns and experience a little more of the community, as opposed to just walking through towns in the middle of the night. But it was also nice because I had quite a few people stop when I was on the road and offer me rides. And I try to explain to them, sorry, I appreciate it, it's very kind of you, but I'm just walking by myself. But yeah, it was in really, really great shape. It was well blazed and it was well taken care of.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my experience too. And I agree. I've told everyone, I think April is the month to do it, because I could see the potential for extreme overgrowth in a few areas. And I think that April is definitely a really good time. Although there are the blowdowns from the winter before, if they haven't been cleared, that can be a problem.
Exactly. The section that I mentioned, it was actually the only time I missed a turn on the trail. I was passing a group that were camping and one of their dogs was off leash. I'm sure they were not expecting to have somebody come through at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And I just walked up and the dog jumped up on me and I was a little startled and I didn't mind. But then I just said good morning and kept walking. And then my watch had the GPS track on it, so it buzzed, let me know I was off trail. I turned around and walked back. And one of the women who are camping asked me, she said, are you going down there? I said, I am. And she said, well, good luck. There's a bunch of blowdowns, so be prepared. And sure enough, it was about 2 miles of lots of blowdowns that I was climbing over and going uphill around. But that was pretty much the only part of the trail that was unmaintained. And it was clearly a microburst or something that had happened over the winter.
Yeah. I had a similar, I think it was only about a mile, where it was just extreme blowdowns and exhausting. And then the rest of the trail was super. So yeah, I guess you got to pay your dues somewhere along the way. Another thing that I've definitely heard a lot about, and I know that this can actually be a real serious issue, is lack of water. I mean, this is a problem everywhere in PA on ridges. They dry out and there's not a lot of springs. So usually early in the season, I feel like there's more water than later. What was your experience with water sources on the trail? Were you finding water? Was water non-existent? Were you having to go off trail to get water? What was that like for you?
So surprisingly, the most difficult stretches to find water was when I was in towns, because it's difficult to find a stream in a residential neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And also I was a little concerned because there's a lot of cattle runoff. So I didn't really have a choice, but I was drinking a lot of farm streams.
Mm.
But there were a few 15-mile, 20-mile carries, but I'm used to that, I guess. And I was prepared. I had 2 liters of water to carry, and I can last pretty long without a stretch of water. So it wasn't too bad. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That was my experience. Most of the water sources had water, but I was definitely concerned about that going into it. So
yeah. And on my mid-state trail, I actually used the Guthooks Far Out app, which it's almost like cheating because you know exactly where the water is and how far you have and where you are. I had to look at topographic maps and see where streams were and be prepared. So I had a lot of notes for myself ahead of time to let myself know 18-mile ridge walk or 15 miles through town. So I had those waypoints and I knew when I would have to fill up water and how long I'd have to go for it.
And were you using the Potomac Appalachian Trail Club's guidebooks for the Tuscarora, or were you just using maps?
So I was just using maps. There's an app called HIIKER. And so I used that GPX file because it's a accepted route by the PATC. And I wanted to make sure that I was always on the trail and there was some GPX file that told me that I hadn't deviated. So that's all I used was that GPX file.
That's interesting. I didn't have that when I hiked. I just used the guidebook. So it's interesting to hear that you were able to do it just with that GPX file.
Yeah. And it was funny. I definitely wish I had the guidebooks, but I was asking some people that were familiar with the trail what they recommended and if there was a GPX file, and somebody said, you need a map. You can't go out on that trail without a map. But yeah, I somehow managed to make it happen.
Right. It is well blazed. So
yeah, I was going to say the only confusing parts are when you're in town, because really the blazes in the towns are a lot less prevalent. So you have to know it's 2 miles and then you make a left onto a country road.
Yeah, definitely. When you came, you would have been coming down off of Massanutten, and then you cross the valley before you get over to Massanutten West, I guess, the other part of the George Washington and Jefferson National Forest. I know that's like a very long route through towns and country roads and stuff, but there was a relocation because of private property recently in the last few years. Can you talk a little bit about what that was like and how that affected your route, if at all?
So I think it added 7 miles to the overall length of the trail, but it wasn't a huge deal because there's a Tuscarora Trail website and it actually had step-by-step instructions. And again, the GPX file I had actually had which turns I needed to make and where I had to go. So I was prepared for that and I knew exactly where I was making the turn. I was a little concerned at the Massanutten because there's no sign or blaze that says trail detour.
Right.
And so I took out my phone and I kept looking at it. And I was trying to convince myself that I should go down the Massanutten, but you still see blue blazes in front of you.
Right.
But fortunately, I had cell service. So I went to the Tuscarora website and double checked their posting. And it clearly said at this point, go Massanutten. So
my hiking partner and I did something different too there, because he had run, I can't remember if it's Old Dominion or Massanutten, but he had run the race, the ultramarathon, many years ago. And so we took an alternate route, basically just the race course route through town, because we went into town and resupplied. And then we just took the course and rejoined the route. But I remember when we got to that turnoff, seeing the blue blazes, and I was just like, it's not even marked that it's closed or a detour. How far do you have to go down that before you see that this is closed? Thought it was very confusing that it wasn't signed on the trail at all, that there was a detour. And especially, I would imagine, in an FKT setting, when you're tired, you just are like, am I doing this right? Is this the right way to go? You don't want to do it wrong.
Yeah, fortunately, it was early on and in daylight.
Right.
So it made it a little easier.
Yeah, that's always good to be in daylight. It's not nice to be confused when it's dark. It always makes it worse. So let's talk about the infamous rocks. You must have a love-hate relationship with rocks, considering all of the things you've done. So I'm curious how the rocks on the Tuscarora compare to the rocks on other trails you've done, how they affected your FKT, what that experience was like. Just paint the picture for our listeners who have never seen Pennsylvania rocks or Tuscarora rocks and exactly what it's like out there?
So I was expecting the rocks and I knew they were coming. They were not bad at all south of Pennsylvania. But as soon as I cross over the Pennsylvania border, there's a ridge line and you can see where you're going into the state game lands. And there's actually a picture that I posted of me pointing to the ridge as I was going up it. And of course, I reached that right at sunset. So my first experience with Pennsylvania rocks, again, was in the pitch black. And I was navigating sort of knife edge ridge lines that are, if you slide down, it's not the end of the world, but it would be uncomfortable if you slid down into the brush. But with it being dark, it gives it a little more of a menacing feel to it. But that was not that bad. My goal was to push on to Big Mountain Shelter. I think it was my third night, but that ridge just really wore me down. And I think it's 10 or 50 mile water carry. And I got to one of the shelters. I can't remember the name of it, but it's a mile hike down and then a mile hike back up about 1,000 feet. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, as I was hiking in the dark, I said, if Big Mountain is only 6 miles ahead, I'll do it. I'll push through. If it's more than that, I'm going to hike the mile down and take the 50 minute hit. And as soon as I got there, it said it's 9 miles further. And I think it was at that point, 12:30 AM. And I just didn't have it in me. I'd been hiking for 22 hours or something like that. So I decided to hike down the 1,000 feet, hike back up, and about 3 hours later. So, but yeah, in hindsight though, that was even the worst part. Once you get into Tuscarora State Forest, that's where the rocks overtake you. And so I had an eagle, a beagle, and a seagull. My eagle was to beat the supported time of 3 days. I think it's 3 days, 7 hours or 3 days, 17 hours. As soon as I hit Tuscarora State Forest, I said, there's no way I'm going to come close to that. I knew that I had all the additional rocks ahead of me. And so at that point, I was trying to push on to Colonel Denning's State Park. There's a shelter up that about a mile from there. But as soon as I hit those rocks, I knew that I wasn't going to make the supported time. So I took about 1.5 hour nap and then woke up and kept going.
Can you talk a little bit about how the evolving goals affected your mindset while you're out there? Because in your report, it sounds like you had to adjust your goal a couple of different times when even beyond the A goal.
Yeah. So like I said, A goal was 3 days, whatever the supported time, 3 days, 17 hours, I think it was.
I think so, yeah.
And then my B goal is to break 4 days. And so you're doing a lot of math. It's kind of funny because in the darkest, literally the darkest hours of the night is when I listen to the Fastest Known podcast. I save them all for night because I listen to the people that have experienced what I'm doing before. And it gives me motivation. It makes me smile and laugh when I'm walking through the woods. And I think it was Jeff Garmeyer who said, I never do as much math as I do when I'm on the trail.
Right.
I think it was when he did the John Muir FKT. Because you're constantly trying to figure out, all right, if I'm doing 4 miles an hour, can I get to this point? If I'm doing 3.5, what am I going to do? And so you're just constantly trying to figure out what you're capable of and what's ahead of you. And so it's really a sort of a dynamic process in your head while you're also going through sleep deprivation and seeing crazy things.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about sleep. You have mentioned sleeping, so obviously you did sleep. What was your sleep strategy like? How much were you sleeping? When were you sleeping? What did that look like?
So it's interesting. This has evolved a lot through my FKTs. So my early FKTs were more just hikes, and then I'd sleep and then wake up and hike. I've learned that I can go with very little sleep. I try to get the first night at least 4 hours, just so I'm not starting with a deficit. And then after that, I can usually make it about 3.5 hours and still be functional. So it's interesting because I read somewhere that your philosophy is the dirt nap, where you prefer, I think it's 2 hours early in the night and then 2 hours late in the morning.
Or whenever your body says to lay down and go to sleep.
I prefer to do longer 4-hour stretches just because I save myself the time of setting up and taking down camp and opening my bag and doing whatever I have to do. And I also get a little more refreshed from a 3-hour nap or a 4-hour nap versus an hour and a half. Nights don't really mean anything, but the last night going into the final day, I slept for about 90 minutes and I was hoping that would get me through to daylight, because for me, daylight, once the sun comes up, my brain switches and all of a sudden I'm awake again. And my brain says, all right, your circadian rhythm says, all right, it's time to go. But it was 5 a.m. just before dawn, and I was hiking up to Colonel Denning State Park, and I stopped in the middle of the trail. Fortunately, it's a really wide trail because I was definitely weaving back and forth as I was going up. I put my shoulders on my trekking poles, and I definitely fell asleep for, a minute or two or 3 minutes maybe. And it's always an uncomfortable feeling when you wake up and you realize that you'd actually fallen asleep standing up.
So you literally took a horse nap. That's next level right there.
Yeah. Fortunately, again, I think Jeff Garmeyer said on his FKT, he actually didn't have trekking poles to lean on, but he just fell face forward into the trail and fell asleep. But I got myself together. I knew that the shelter was about a mile ahead, but at the same time, it was torturous because I also knew that dawn was only about an hour and a half away. But I decided that it wasn't really safe for me to continue hiking if I was falling asleep standing up. So I decided to take a quick, I think it was a 40-minute nap where I just threw my sleeping bag down, got in with my shoes on and everything, and just closed my eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely resonate with that. On my PAFKT, I was literally 3.5 miles from the end and the sun was up. It was just after dawn. And I fell asleep walking. I literally had to lay down and take like a 30-minute nap because I was weaving and I was just like, I'm going to fall asleep walking and land on my face. I have to lay down and take a nap. This is ridiculous. I'm almost done, but I have to nap.
Exactly. There's a point where your brain just says, no more. You have to stop.
Yeah.
I actually have a question about your sleep schedule on the PA Appalachian Trail. So I was curious. I saw on your first day, you went straight through the night, which I give you an incredible amount of respect. I could go through the night, but then how much further did you go after dawn before you fell asleep?
Oh, I hiked the whole next day. I hiked the first, I think I hiked 30 hours or something like that. I mean, it wasn't intentional because it just happened to be that the weekend I had picked to start was the weekend we got that. I don't know if you got it in Philly, but there was like 5 inches of rain at Penmar over a 48-hour period. And so I was supposed to start Sunday morning and I pushed it back to starting Sunday evening. I was able to rearrange my shuttle to the evening because I didn't want to start in torrential downpour. And it did rain all night, but it probably only rained 1/2 inch on me my first night. So I started at 6 p.m. and then I hiked until dark the next day. So like 8 p.m. the next night. And I think that was my only night of sleep. Like you, I slept 4 hours. And then that was it. And from then on, it was just dirt naps only for sometimes an hour, sometimes 30 minutes. But I went that first 70-something miles, basically to the Tuscarora Trail. I was on Darlington Ridge when I when it got to be dark and I took my first sleep. So, yeah. So you briefly touched on how when you first started out, you were doing more hiking. So on the Tuscarora Trail, how much of your time is running versus hiking? Are you trying to run and then just hiking when you can't? Or are you mixing it in? Or is it still predominantly hiking and then some running? What's your speed like?
So that has also evolved quite a bit. When I did my mid-state FKT, I didn't run at all. I hiked the entire time except the last day. I ran a bit. I actually had a knee injury, just runner's knee. And I stopped running for about 1.5 years to see if that would heal, and it never did. Eventually, I got physical therapy and was able to heal it. So I started back running again, and I realized that I can get a lot more miles in if I'm running versus if I'm just walking. And so I started doing more running FKTs, the Chuck Kuiper and the Kohana FKT. And once I did those, that's where I decided to change my strategy. When I was hiking the Tuscarora, my goal was to run as much as possible. And I was trying to get an average of 17-minute miles. And again, there's a lot of roads. I was trying to run on the roads. And then if it was technical, I'd be able to slow down a little bit. And I actually did just about 17-minute miles the first day, which was 53 miles. But it definitely slowed down a bit as the miles went on and the elevation and the rocks picked up. And I'm definitely risk averse when it comes to trail running. I don't really have a desire to go headfirst into a rock and crack my shoulder or collarbone.
I think that's pretty reasonable.
So I definitely take my time, and I'm a pretty slow trail runner, but I can do it for a good distance. About a week before the FKT, I sewed my own running pack, which was a running vest style with a 30-liter pack in the back. So I could keep all of my food in front, and then I had a bottom pocket where I put my trash, and then I had little zipper pockets for my Aquamira and my Garmin. And I went on 2 7-mile runs in Philly with a 25-pound pack and just decided to take the pack out and onto the Tuscarora. And it worked out great. It was stable and allowed me to run. So I was a little nervous because I hadn't really tested the pack, but it worked out well. Yeah, it was great because I had everything right in front and I didn't have to stop. Kept me efficient.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like usually, you know, it's like, don't experiment with brand new gear on an FKT, and you have a lot of faith in your sewing ability. I do not have that much faith in my sewing ability. If I made a pack, I feel like it would fall apart when I'm running with it.
Yeah, I mean, they're not pretty. The stitches aren't beautiful, but it does its job, yeah.
So a couple more questions for you specifically about the route and conditions on the route. When I was hiking the Tuscarora, there was this one spot that I came down and I turned around and I looked back up at it. And I was just like, there is no way anybody could pay me to want to go up that. And I'm just kind of curious, because you would have gone up it. The climb up out of like the spring run road section where you're going through Path Valley, has that improved? Like, because basically it was like I slid down that slope on my butt. Like, there was no trail, like there were no switchbacks, it was just dirt. Like, was this any better for you? Like, did you have to use your hands going up that? Like, I'm like, do you know what I'm talking about?
So I do. It was, I could actually see where somebody had slid down where I was going up. But I put in my FKT report, I mentioned this, but as I was going towards that ridge, a guy drove past me in his car, and then he put his brakes on and backed up, and he rolled down his window and he said, "Hey, are you going up on that ridge line up there?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm headed up there." And he said, "Yeah, you look like it. I was up there yesterday looking for mushrooms, and there were so many copperheads all over the place."
That's exactly what you want to hear.
Exactly. So I'm now hiking up this non-switchback trail with my hands trying to climb up, and then knowing that at the top, I get to navigate copperheads and
Snake Ridge.
But Snake Ridge. I didn't see any, so that was good, but.
Well, that's good. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know what the slope was like when you were there, but when I went on that slope, it was just all leaves. So I was paranoid that there were going to be copperheads in the leaves, and then you can't see them when they're in the leaves. They just blend right in.
They're known for that. I kept looking at the GPX track because I was like, how is this? And a frustrating thing with the Tuscarora is I don't know if they've rerouted it recently, but you'll be on a knife edge ridge. And so I should say it's frustrating when you're trying to hike 53 miles in a day. It's beautiful when you want to see vistas and views and experience the trail, but you'll be on a knife edge ridge where it just drops off on both sides. But about 100 yards to your left, you'll see a forest road that looks just smooth and you could just cruise on that. But instead, and you'll see the blue blaze right in front of you, and that you'll know you're on the trail.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a mean trick they play.
Right.
But again, when I was hiking up that section, I saw that there was a switchback that sort of looped around on a forest road. But sure enough, the trail just went straight up that mountain. Yeah.
Straight up. That's one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen on a trail, honestly. So you didn't see any copperheads up there. Did you see any snakes on your hike anywhere along the way?
I did. In Tuscarora State Forest, it was after my hour and a half nap. It was maybe 7 miles from where I fell asleep standing up. I was just stumbling along in the night, tripping over rocks, which probably it sounds a lot scarier than it is. It was a pretty wide trail. I think it was an old forest road or railroad grade. And all of a sudden my brain just said, stop. And right in front of me is a huge rattlesnake.
Wow.
And it was cold, it was probably 50 degrees or high 40s. And so they're really docile at that temperature. And it didn't even rattle or move or do anything. And so I just stood, admired it, took a picture, and then moved on.
Nice.
So it was a great experience.
Right.
I always love encountering them, but I prefer when they let me know before I run into them.
I mean, that's one of the benefits to rattlesnakes, that they let you know, as opposed to copperheads, which don't. It's funny how our brains work, right? When you're so sleep deprived that your conscious, rational brain is lagging really far behind, but there is that primitive part of you that's still on and still very alert. I think for me, I'm not aware of that part of my brain in my day-to-day life, but when I'm in this FKT situation or the sleep deprived state, I become aware that it's there all the time watching out for you. Because similar to what you said, when I was doing my Appalachian Trail FKT years ago, middle of the night, super sleep deprived, the wobbling state, and I was just hiking, and then all of a sudden I just felt this like stop, and then I'm just like bearing down, and it took me a second to realize that there was a copperhead coming down the trail at me, and I didn't even recognize it as a copperhead at first. I was just looking, I was like, there's a snake. Very slowly, like, okay, there's a snake. It looks like a rattlesnake. It's not rattling. What is this thing? And like, it took me like, you know, probably it was 30 seconds, but it felt like 2 minutes to figure out that it was a copperhead. But like, that part of your brain is still working and still saying, you know, hey, pay attention, you know, watching out for you. And I just think that that's really fascinating. And it's an interesting experience I wouldn't have had without pushing myself in this like FKT, like modality and like sleep deprived state and things like that.
Yeah. And when I was up on the first ridge in Pennsylvania, I was walking along, and all of a sudden, again, my brain just said, there's a bird sitting on a log right in front of you in the trail. And it was a small bird. It wasn't a grouse or anything like that. And so I was like, is that really a bird, or am I just seeing a bird?
Right.
And so I decided to take my phone out and I took a picture of it. And I said, all right, if it's a bird, I'll see it tomorrow and remember that it was a bird. But then it actually flew up and hit my trekking pole, which was surprising. And it was actually a benefit because it then got my adrenaline flowing. So I had no idea what was going on. And that gave me momentum for another 2 or 3 miles.
Right. Yeah. Those little adrenaline pulses that get you going. I just have a couple more questions for you, more about FKTs in life. You mentioned earlier that your wife watches your daughter when you're out doing these things. So I'm curious if you have any tips for our listeners. I know a lot of people are trying to juggle work and family and getting out there and doing cool things. Do you have any tips on balancing family time, work, and FKTs or training?
I have an 11-month-old daughter, Addie, and a 4-year-old daughter, Caroline. And with one, it was much more manageable. With two, it becomes a little more complicated. And so what I do is for training, I do most of my early runs when our youngest, Addie, wakes up at 3:30 or 4 in the morning. I'll give her bottle. And then I'll just from there head out to the trail and then do my morning runs where I usually run, I don't know, 20 to 25 miles before an FKT. And that way I can get back early. I'm usually back by 10 or 11 and then I get to spend the whole day with the family. And then I also recently tried to incorporate family vacations with FKTs. So when we did the Krahana FKT, we rented a cabin in Pennsylvania State Park. And so my wife was there with the two kids. I woke up at 2:30 in the morning, said goodbye to them, started running, let them know I'd be back in about, I said 17 hours, but I think it took me 20. And I was trying to get back before bedtime, but unfortunately that one didn't happen. So it's definitely a challenge. And that's part of my motivation for doing FKTs in the first place, because I really don't have the time to go out and hike for 9 days on the Donut Hole Trail or do longer trips. So if I can compress 250 mile trail into 4 days, that makes it a little more manageable being away from home.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that those are good tips. Do you carry a spot or an InReach? Because I guess being 3 hours late on that length of a run isn't super crazy, but does your wife have a way to know where you are out there when you're doing these things?
She does. I have a Garmin InReach that I use,
okay.
Which she also knows that I'm a purist when it comes to communication. So I let her know that you'll get my automated I'm alive preset messages. But since I'm doing it unsupported, I really want to be out there by myself with no motivations from the outside world and no real communications.
So, right. But she's not also calling DCNR because you're 3 hours late on your run.
She knows that I'm out there. I'm pretty self-sufficient. I'll just do my own thing.
Yeah. Right. I'd love to have maybe some closing thoughts on what these adventures, FKTs, or just spending time out in the woods, what they mean to you and what role they play in your life, if you would care to share that.
So I do a lot of backpacking. There's a time and a place for hiking 15 miles, 10 miles. And so I enjoy that. Difference is with the longer FKTs, you really push yourself to a place that you wouldn't ever be in normal daily life. And you get to experience, for example, I will be out on a ridge in southern Pennsylvania, looking down at towns 1,000 feet below me with nobody around. I'm just alone. And it's an interesting experience to just see everything around you, but not be immersed in that, pushing yourself and seeing what the human body is capable of.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and chatting all about this. It's been a wonderful opportunity.
It was my pleasure. It was so much fun.
Thanks again, Bob, for coming on the show. You can check out his FKTs on the website, fastestknowntime.com.